The U.S. Supreme Court Thursday handed down a major victory for states looking to collect more taxes from online sales. In a 5-4 decision, the nation's top court sided with South Dakota in its high-profile fight to force online retailers to collect and hand over sales taxes. The ruling opens the door for other states to do the same after watching retail sales taxes disappear as consumers flocked to the internet. According to a federal report, some $13 billion could flow back into state coffers.
South African avocado farmers may have struck green gold. Booming demand at home and abroad has doubled the fruit's price tag over the past decade, and growers are looking to cash in. Avocado exports already generate over $130 million for South Africa. But researchers are experimenting with ways to extend the season by an extra 4 months.
Instagram, Facebook's photo sharing app, hugely popular among teens and millennials, now brings you long-form video. And don't let anyone tell you video should be shot horizontally. Instagram's new IGTV brings you vertical video.
Teens are now watching 40% less TV than they did 5 years ago. And on Instagram, people are watching 60% more video in just the last year. And it's time for video to move forward and to evolve.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Friday. It's June 22nd, and it's 5:11 in the morning. We're glad you're here with us for another edition of The Opening Bell and another business day. Friday on the program always brings our regulars back. Paul Nolte is here from Kingsview Asset Management. We'll bring in Paul momentarily. We'll talk about our portfolios in the economy, and a little bit later on, Brian Summers is in from skift.com, a conversation about how airlines are starting to really personalize your flights, all the way down to knowing what drink you like when you get on board. We'll talk to Brian at 5:40 this morning. But first, on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, futures are pointing toward opening gains on Wall Street later this morning. Dow futures are up about 98 points. NASDAQ and S&P futures are also in the green. Crude oil trading 66.34 today. That's up about 79 cents. News from Vienna, where Saudi Arabia's oil minister says officials from major crude-producing nations will discuss a proposal to increase output by about 1 million barrels per day. Ministers of OPEC are meeting today in Vienna for what could be a difficult gathering. Around the rest of the globe, markets in Europe are generally higher, with the FTSE up almost three-quarters, and the DAX up about a quarter, about a half a percent on the CAC. And markets generally are positive in Asia as well, as the trading day gets ready to end there. A couple of other stories that we're watching for you this morning. We have been reporting a lot about Brexit over the last year or so. Aviation giant Airbus has threatened to leave Britain if the country leaves the European Union without an agreement on future trading relations. The company, which employs about 14,000 people at 25 sites in the UK, says it will reconsider its long-term footprint in the country if there is no deal. Airbus also says currently proposed transition deal that runs through December of 2020 is too short for the company to reorganize its supply chain. And the European Union is enforcing tariffs on $3.4 billion in U.S. products as of today in retaliation for duties the Trump administration has put on European steel and aluminum. And let's begin there with Paul Nolte this morning, SVP and Senior Portfolio Manager at Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago. Paul, good morning. Welcome to 303 Wacker.
Good morning, Steve. Nice digs. Get the nice view out the windows. It's a nice new place. Well, I like it.
Great. We're happy that you're happy about it. We've got your own special chair there as well that has three different settings. It's a low, high, and higher. So your comfort is what we're looking for this morning.
Excellent.
What should we be paying attention to? I know I mentioned the tariffs that's happening today. Again, trade is front and center, right?
It is, and it's really the part that's really roiling the markets because they don't know exactly what to make of the impacts. We're just now starting to see some of the impacts on the steel and aluminum tariffs. We're seeing that work its way into the economy through the pricing mechanism. And what we don't know is how companies are going to react. I mean, you saw the picture of Wilbur Ross, Secretary of Commerce, holding up a Campbell soup can saying, you know, it's going to be an extra penny or two for, you know, your soup. Well, companies may pass that along to consumers. Companies may also eat that and reduce their overall margins, which would reduce their earnings per share. And that's why you're seeing the markets getting roiled like this, because, again, if it means lower earnings, that means lower stock prices. And that's part of the reason why the markets are acting as goofy as they are. We've seen the Dow down now 8 days in a row coming into today's trading. And that's the main reason why.
I know some company, I have a feeling it's going to be some companies do that and other companies are going to pass the cost along. Mm-hmm. We had a report earlier this week that already washers and dryers, if you go to try to buy one, are about 20% more expensive than they were a couple of weeks ago.
Right. And that, you know, and some companies are going to do that. And it, and that's why I said it's going to take a while. We just saw the tariffs starting to hit. We're starting to see some of the early signs of higher prices working its, or their way into the economy. So it's not going to show up in a lot of the official data until we get into August, September. And it probably won't start showing up in corporate earnings until probably January of next year when we start to report fourth quarter. Again, it's going to take a while for this to all happen. And what we really don't know, and as you reported earlier, what are other countries going to do in response? And how is that going to impact the United States? We're seeing it certainly with China, you know, in the agricultural markets and everything else, and soybean prices coming way down because they're a huge buyer of U.S. soybean. That's some of the impacts and knock-on effects. And again, we don't know what those implications are going to be going forward. And if any of them get rolled back, after a while, you may say, you know, shoot, this is not really the way we want to go. We need to back off here a little bit.
You mentioned the agriculture part of that. I read China is telling its soybean farmers to plant more acreage. So they're thinking the long game there. That could possibly be impactful moving forward a year or so in advance, in ahead.
Oh, absolutely. And they're sourcing, you know, their soybeans from Brazil and other places around the world. We're not the only ones that produce it. But when you take a look at our trade with China, we are a much bigger overall trading partner with China than they are to us. So the impact, and that's kind of the bet that is being played out here, is that what we trade with you is so much more than what we buy from you. We can play that game and allow that to happen. The impact, I think, is going to be over some time where trade overall declines. You know, we've had a huge amount of trade globally. It's been a good thing to be trading like we have been. So what that trading slowdown means is it requires all the economies to redo how they do business, and that it has a global slowdown impact. Mm-hmm. So we could see slowing economies globally because of a lot of the trade issues that we're seeing.
And the impact down the road from that will be not only higher prices for us, but possibly job losses, cutbacks in production.
You know, again, when you're talking about a slowing economy, that's what you're going to see. You're going to see those types of things work their way into the economy. Slower overall economy, lower growth means lower job growth, job losses, slower earnings and slower earnings growth, which means lower global stock prices. And that's, again, why the markets are struggling at this point to try to reconcile all the data that's coming in from the various political centers.
That's Paul Nolte of Kingsview Asset Management. Paul, hang on. We're going to continue our conversation with Paul after we take a break here.
From ABC News, Wall Street Now. Investors' fear of a U.S. trade war with China has the Dow Jones Industrial Average on the brink of its longest losing streak since the 1970s. The Dow fell 200 points yesterday to land at 24,461, its eighth consecutive daily decline. The NASDAQ composite was off 68, the S&P 500 down 17.5. Speaking of, the European Union is expected to announce tariffs today on over $3 billion worth of U.S. products, everything from whiskey to motorcycles. It comes after the Trump administration slapped import duties on incoming European aluminum and steel. Online shopping might soon cost you more. The Supreme Court, in a 5-4 ruling, says states may force internet retailers to charge sales tax, opening up a new way for cash-strapped states to collect what could be billions in new revenues. And home buyers are feeling the pinch. Lumber futures hit an all-time high last month, helping to push the average price of a new home up by nearly $9,000 in the last year and a half. Jim Ryan, ABC News.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. We're on with Paul Nolte of Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago, our regular Friday conversation. Paul, with all of this trade talk and the potential impacts on not only the U.S. growth, but global growth, I have to ask, what do we do with our portfolios in all of this?
Well, you know, over the last 3-4 weeks or so, the dollar has actually strengthened significantly, and that has had an impact on international. And we've been a big fan of international holdings, so that has been a ding on the portfolio, if you will. A lot of the U.S. stocks, the smaller cap stocks, have done extremely well because they're not as impacted by trade as many of the multinational companies. So small cap has done very, very well here. And certainly, too, I think, as much as the Fed has been talking about raising rates, bonds make a lot of sense. You know, over the last couple of weeks here, the bond portion of the portfolio has held pretty steady while stocks have been bouncing around a lot. So if you're looking for some stability, that's not a bad place to be. And interest rates actually have come down here a little bit, again, as global growth concerns pick up. And the thought is, we really can't be as aggressive raising rates as maybe Chairman Powell wants to. Interest rates can't go too much higher, so the bond portfolio should be relatively stable.
The U.S. 10-year, 2.919, up just about a couple of ticks there, not a whole lot. So that's a little less than the 3 that we saw before, but still higher.
Yeah, it's still higher. But again, when you're in that range of 3.05 down to 2.9, you know, that's a decent rate of return when you take a look at what happens to bonds. So when yields come down, the value of the bond portfolio picks up, and those bonds become a little bit more valuable. So we like that as an offset to the equity markets. It tends to move opposite stocks. So today is a good example. We're seeing stock prices in the futures market pick up. We're seeing yields rise and bond values decline here a little bit. So they tend to offset each other a little bit.
I know you've been keeping keeping track of the curve.
Oh, absolutely.
And it's flattening out still.
Still.
At what point do you get nervous about the recession, the R word?
Yeah, we're starting to see some warning flags fly. So we're now at about a 30 basis points or about a third of 1% difference between the short-term rates and the long-term rates. And that's been coming down pretty regularly over the last year now. If we get down to zero or below, that is historically been the warning sign that a recession is imminent somewhere in the future, and generally 6 to 9 months out. Some of the other things that we take a look at are pointing to the fact that we could see the recession pick up, or at least the signs of a recession picking up from some of the work that we do in August, September. What does that mean?
Of this year.
Well, what it means is that it triggers that signal that, by the way, it's coming forward. We saw it in 2006. That was well in advance of actually the market's falling apart. So it doesn't mean that the stock market is going to turn down right away. What it does mean is while that indicator is below or in recessionary levels, stock market returns from the beginning of that signal to the end of that signal generally are below short-term interest rates. So if interest rates are at 2%, we could see an equity market that's returning something between 0 and 2%. And that's more than our concern, is that the markets could struggle starting maybe in the fall. And again, that may tie into midterm elections as well. So there's other things that are going on that may force that hand. And the Fed is been very aggressive and aggressively talking about raising rates. So we would expect in September that they'll boost rates again by another 25 basis points. And again, flattening that yield curve even more.
Should we take some cash off the table?
A little bit. You know, we've taken a little bit off over the course of the last 6 months or so. We've got a little bit higher cash level, a little bit lower equity exposure than we normally would have, and a little bit higher bond exposure. You know, we're at the late innings, I think, of this market expansion. That doesn't mean that the stock market can't go up another 10 to 15% from here. That's very possible. But when we look out over the next 3 to 5, maybe 7 years, it's going to be a very tough road to go, because we do expect to have a recession somewhere in that next 3 to 5 year window, which means equity prices can be down anywhere from 10, 15 to 20% from the high point to the low point. And so you'd like to have a little bit of powder dry to take advantage of those lower stock prices. So we've been a little bit more cautious in our portfolios starting over the last three months or so.
Big plans for the weekend?
It's going to be kind of a quiet weekend. I've got some travel plans heading up to the Great Northern Woods of Wisconsin and over to Minneapolis to visit some family.
Nice, nice. Well, have a great one.
We'll do it. Thank
you. And we'll see you again next Friday.
Absolutely.
All right. Paul Nolte from Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago. You can find out more about Paul and his colleagues at kingsview.com.
Hi, this is Jim Dahlke with today's Inno Minute on WGN Radio, a rundown of all the Chicago innovation and tech news you need to know, delivered by ChicagoInno.com. Alcom Health's co-founders have resigned from the company's board. Rishi Shah and Shraddha Agarwal have stepped down from their chairman and vice chairman roles, respectively, just days after the company announced it hired a new CEO. The two founders left their day-to-day roles with the company in January as part of a settlement with investors who sued the company for fraud. Microsoft has been criticized this week for its contracts with ICE, as the immigration crisis at the border in Texas has captured the public's attention. But public records show that Microsoft isn't the only big tech company working with ICE. Chicago-based Motorola Solutions also has ties to ICE and has more than $15 million in active contracts with the agency. And Evanston-based biotech startup Aptinex completed its initial public offering this week, raising $102 million in an upsized offering for 6.4 million shares, priced at $16 each. That's today's Inno Minute from WGN Radio. Learn more at ChicagoInno.com and sign up for The Beat, our daily email newsletter.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here with us on our Friday edition. Brian Summers is the airline business reporter at skift.com. He's with us every Friday here on the program to talk about aviation and travel. And today we've got a couple of good topics, including the possibility of a new U.S. airline coming in the scene and personalization on airlines taken to the next level. Brian is with us via Skype from Los Angeles this morning. Brian, let's start with JetBlue. The founder and CEO of JetBlue is talking about starting a new airline.
Yeah, it's certainly possible. JetBlue founder and former CEO David Neeleman has decided, apparently, that he wants to build a new U.S. low-cost airline from scratch. This was according to a report earlier this week from a trade publication called Airline Weekly. It's pretty interesting because, of course, it's been about 11 years since a new U.S. airline took flight. And, of course, that airline doesn't exist anymore. That airline is Virgin America. So you have to go all the way back to 2000 and JetBlue to find a new entrant that's still around. One of the things that you have to remember is that the airline industry is a very tough industry. It's easy to lose a lot of money if you don't know what you're doing. The good news is that David Neeleman has started a lot of airlines. He knows exactly what he's doing, and I think people are pretty excited that this is actually going to happen. People may know that after JetBlue, David Neeleman actually went down to Brazil, created an airline there called Azul. It's another successful airline, so no reason to count him out here.
So, Brian, what do we know about the possible name of the airline? Any other information?
There's a working name apparently called Moxie. I'd be surprised if that's actually the name of the airline, but we'll find out. The other news that came from Airline Weekly is that this new airline will probably fly from secondary airports outside major cities. So that means you probably won't see them at O'Hare, but you might see them in Milwaukee or places like that, Burbank near Los Angeles, where I live. So we'll have to see. But it's good news for consumers.
What kind of airplanes are we thinking they're going to run? Is this going to look like any of the other airlines we see?
Yeah, the report said that they were actually going to buy this airplane from Bombardier called the CS-300. It's a relatively new airplane. I don't think there are any of them flying yet in North America, but we'll see them soon. It's about a 120-seat airplane. It's very quiet. It's supposed to be very comfortable. There's two seats on one side of the aisle and three seats on the other, so very few middle seats. Delta is supposed to be the first airline to fly that in the United States, and I think that will be within a couple of years. So a very good aircraft. It's not like they're going to start out flying with 30-year-old airplanes like some startups do.
There's some news about American Airlines. Airlines, they're down doing a little bit of downsizing.
Yeah, you know, I think everybody knows that American Airlines went through a big merger with U.S. Airways almost 5 years ago. And what happens in any sort of merger is you have vice presidents and managing directors and things like that from both sides of the company. And the airline or whatever company it is just gets a little bit fat in the management ranks. So American told employees this week that, you know, they're going to trim some fat. They didn't say exactly how many people would lose their jobs. They said they try to get to whatever number they're thinking about via attrition and things like that. But yeah, I mean, some of this stuff might be involuntary. The good news is American says that no jobs will be cut that face customers. So you will have the same number of customer service agents and things like that. It's just in the headquarters in Dallas-Fort Worth, you'll probably have fewer executives.
Notice that the story says that the title of director or above. So that's good news for frontline employees.
Yeah, they should be fine in this. And American needs its frontline employees, so I wouldn't expect too many cuts there.
Do we expect this to become a trend? Are the other airlines, do you think, maybe going to follow suit in this area?
United actually did it about a year and a half ago, and they had the same issue. They had gone through a merger with Continental Airlines. The airline got a little bit fat and happy a little bit after Oscar Munoz came in as CEO. He reorganized the company, and lots of executives just sort of left, or you know that they use this euphemism in all these big companies. They say that somebody retired. It doesn't matter that that person is like 42 years old and goes to get another job. Technically, they retire. And so I think we'll see some retirements also at American. But every large company needs to do this every now and then. Otherwise, you know, they just become too bureaucratic and too big.
Ryan, there's another story out there, and I guess this is something that we should all just assume, but how much information airlines have on us and how they're using that to personalize our experience when we get on board.
Yeah, there was an article this week in the Wall Street Journal that was sort of interesting. A lot of us have been following the topic. It's really about personalization on board the airplane. So I think everybody knows if you fly on most airlines, the flight attendants are carrying these handheld devices. They're often iPhones. And they use those iPhones to sell you stuff on the airplane, snacks and things like that. But increasingly, those iPhones have a little bit of information about each customer. So they know if you're a frequent flyer, they know how often you fly, they know if you're an elite member of the airline's frequent flyer program. And they also know things like your birthday. And this was something that was a big deal somewhat recently at United, because the flight attendants will know if it's your birthday and you're on board. They don't know the year, but they know the date. And so they can just come over to you and they can say, you know, happy birthday. And some people find that creepy and some people find that cool. And nobody has found the line yet. I'm not sure that we will. I guess United is leaving it up to flight attendants to decide when it's a good time to do this or not. But I was talking with somebody at United a couple weeks ago, and she said, you know, the birthday thing is a little bit weird, but especially for frequent flyers, you know, 100,000 miles is a very big deal. So if you're a road warrior and you fly 100,000 miles a year, you feel really good about yourself. I know that sounds weird, but people get into it. And so if you're on an airplane and the flight attendant knows from their handhold device that you're crossing over the 100,000 mile threshold, and the flight attendant says thank you, almost invariably the customer gets really excited. It's like, hey, I'm crossing over this wonderful threshold, 100,000 miles this year, and the airline is recognizing it. How cool is that? So some people like it, some people don't, but I think for the most part, people like that sort of thing.
Well, I'm curious what you think would be the creepy line. If for instance, one of the flight attendants came up and said, hey, Brian, I know that you like to drink tomato juice. Here's a tomato juice. Is that where it gets creepy, or does it get creepy when they ask about your family?
Yeah, it's hard to know. I think everybody has a different idea of what is creepy. I spoke to somebody at Lufthansa recently, and he said, you know, yes, the airline knows if you've ordered a vodka tonic on every flight for your last 10 flights. But is it really such a hardship for the customer to ask for it an 11th time? Do you want that flight attendant to put down the drink before you ask it? Or should we just go old-fashioned and, look, I ask for what I want and I get it. Again, I'm repeating myself here, but everybody has a different line, and it's so hard for airlines or any company to know what that line is. So I think airlines are treading carefully with this idea of personalization.
Well, as somebody who flies for fun, I have to ask this question. We're always feed to death, all of these fees. I could see where they could charge a fee for this at some point, or no?
Hard to tell. Yeah, I really don't know.
All right. Brian, always good chatting with you. We'll see you next time.
Thank you, Steve.
Brian Summers is the airline business reporter at skift.com with us via Skype this morning from Los Angeles. Make sure you follow Brian on Twitter at Brian Summers and Skift as well at Skift. S-K-I-F-T.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, futures are pointing toward opening gains later this morning on Wall Street. Pretty steady on the Dow, now up 111 points, almost a half a percent. Same story playing out on the S&P and NASDAQ, so it should be positive at 8:30 Chicago time this morning. Let's bring in Orion Samuelson now, a conversation about agriculture and commodities. Orion, good morning.
Well, good morning to you, and we have at least half a farm bill this morning because with a two-vote margin, the House passed the version of their farm bill yesterday. So it's going to be interesting to see because I think I've been covering farm bills. They do one every 5 years, and I think I've been covering the preparation and the putting together of a farm bill for at least five or six farm bills, and they hardly ever get done on time. But we may make it now because now they go to the Senate to get their farm vote, but it was only two votes yesterday in the House that gave them the victory on the bill. And generally, Steve, we're getting a positive reaction from most of the farm organizations, a couple that, of course, don't like it. Democrats don't like it. But it's an $867 billion farm bill in a 213 to 211 vote.
One of the concerns about this is the possibility that millions of people could not get food stamps in the future. That's probably going to be a big issue going over to the Senate, isn't it?
It is, and it's been an issue every time they have written a farm bill because there are strong feelings on both sides. One says, you know, if you're going to get food stamps, you ought to be actively searching for a job. And the other one says we ought to be able to test for drugs and drug usage if you're going to get the advantage of food from, what was once called so long ago I can't remember the name. It's now SNAP, which is the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. And obviously, there are people who do need it, and people with families particularly. But as I've watched the numbers grow, I think a lot of people take advantage of the free food bill, as one farmer called it. And so now the Senate considering its own farm bill. No major changes in the Senate bill to the SNAP program, which is used by more than 40 million Americans, or about 12% of the total U.S. population.
Orion, here we are again another Friday morning talking about trade. Still a lot of concern about trade. I heard earlier this week that China's been telling its soybean farmers to get ready to start growing more soybeans if they can. This is looking like it might become sort of a protracted thing, isn't it?
Well, it goes back to my days in grade school in Wisconsin. My dad is bigger than your dad, and he can whip you. And that's kind of the argument we've been going back and forth. The latest this morning from China, Chinese media, saying U.S. protectionism is self-defeating and, quote, a symptom of paranoid delusions that must not distract China from its path of modernization. And so the war of words continues on. China conveniently overlooks the fact of the tremendous trade surplus they have with the United States. We have a huge trade gap with China, and sooner or later, that's got to be worked out because it's affecting world trade. But yeah, it goes on and on and on, and it is taking its toll on agricultural prices here in the U.S.
What can we expect tomorrow on the morning show?
Well, Jim Fazell is back, so we're going to be, and there's a disease hitting some trees here in the Chicago area, so we'll be talking about that, and then Jim Fazell will have his ideas on what you should be doing this coming weekend in the garden, or in the lawn, or with the flowers, or with the trees, so Jim will be here.
All right, Orion, have a great weekend.
You too.
And we'll be listening to the morning show starting at 5 o'clock tomorrow morning right here on 720 WGN. On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook, not a lot going on this morning for the markets to consider. A lot of our reports came yesterday and earlier in the week. We are watching closely the OPEC meeting that's in Vienna today. A couple of earnings on the calendar, but it's going to be a pretty quiet Friday in terms of big economic reports.